Let's talk a little bit about the story of the book of Esther. So I want to give you a little bit of background to the book of Esther so that you can understand some of the story and where it's coming from. This book of the Bible takes place between 486 and 465 B.C. So that's, 450-ish years before Jesus Christ was born. It's a historical narrative that records what happens in a city called Susa. And in the city of Susa was in the Persian Empire. And this book is a story. And a story just doesn't tell the bare facts of what happens. But a story puts things together in a way that makes it interesting, that tries to tell us a point, that tries to teach us the truth about what happened. So it's not just the bare facts. It's a story that's crafted together with all kinds of wonderful things like humor and other literary devices that help us to understand what the story is about, okay? It's a story of Esther and Mordecai, and they were Jews who were living in Persia at this time in the city of Susa. Now, some of you may be wondering, why were they not living in Jerusalem or living, in Israel, their homeland? Well, here's what happened. God had made a promise with his people, a covenant with them that he gave to them through Moses, through the Ten Commandments and the law. And the people of God, they consistently disobeyed. They kept doing things that were wrong. And so God finally said, listen, this is not the way we're supposed to live. So I'm going to allow foreign kings to come. And they came and captured the nation of Israel. And they took them away to live somewhere that wasn't their own homeland. And that's why they were called exiles. That's what that word means. They were living in exile. And many of them lived in Babylon, which is where modern day Iraq is. And then the Persian Empire came from modern day Iran. And they came and they developed an empire in the world. You guys have probably heard of the Greek Empire and the Roman Empire, right? Well, the Persian Empire stretched all the way from India to the Greek islands. They tried to get on the Greek mainland, but they couldn't. They made it to the Greek islands and then as far south as northern Sudan in Africa. So this was a pretty big empire. And this empire was different because Cyrus, who was the first emperor of that empire, the king, he told everyone, listen, all you people from these different countries, you can go back. I'm going to let you go back to the land that you're from. And you can go back to your hometown. You can go back and rebuild your houses and your temples. And in the Bible, if you want to read that story is found in Ezra and Nehemiah. And while the Jews were not living in their hometown, that's when they were first called the Jews. Has anybody ever wondered about that? Why they're called Israelites, Hebrews, and Jews? Well, they weren't called Jews until they were living in exile because people would say, where are you from? And they would say, well, we're from a land called Judah. So they called them the Jews. And this was the time when they were first starting to be called the Jews. Now, not everybody moved back to Jerusalem. Not everybody moved back and helped rebuild the temple. So the book of Esther is the story of the Jews who didn't move back. They decided to stay in the towns that they had probably grown up in and to live there. So Esther and Mordecai are living in the Persian Empire in the city of Susa. Now, another thing I want to say about this book before we read the story is this. The book of Esther is unique in the whole Bible. You know why? Because it never mentions God. Not once. Now, that's strange, isn't it? Why would there be a book in the Bible that never, ever mentions God? Explicitly. There's no mention of religious festivals or activities, with the exception of perhaps there's a mention of fasting, but it may or may not have been religious in nature. There's no miracle, there's no prophet, there's no temple, there's no priest. In fact, in all of the story, you wonder, where is God? But we'll return to that question in a moment. The story is rather about the group of people who are living in a hostile environment. In a country that's not their own, as a minority group, as an oppressed people. But we'll return to the question of God in a moment. The book was important. I want to give you a little bit of history. The book was important to the Jews during the time of the Nazis, during the time of the reign of Hitler in Germany, because they saw Hitler as kind of a bad guy like Haman. Haman, you're going to meet in a minute, is the bad guy in the story of Esther. And the Jews thought Hitler was like Haman because he was trying to destroy all the Jews. But the strange thing was Hitler himself said he was like Haman. He actually called himself a new Haman. And he said, listen, I don't want you to read the book of Esther, and I don't want you to celebrate your festival of Purim.
And Purim is the festival that the Jews celebrate to this day that remembers what God did for them in this story we're about to read. And Hitler said, I don't want you to, you can't recite that book, you can't read that book, you can't celebrate Purim, I forbid it. But the stories came out of all of the concentration camps that said that the Jews recited the book of Esther from memory, and they even wrote it out on the walls and on the ground. Not just as a remembrance of their past deliverance, but as a prophecy, a prophetic hope of future salvation. You see, the book of Esther is a story of survival, a story of survival against all odds. It's about turning the tables on your oppressor. It's about the reversal of fortunes. It's about a man and a woman who spoke up and spoke out on behalf of their people. And Esther and Mordecai are not great saints. They're not goody-goodies. They kind of make decisions that are questionable sometimes, and we don't know exactly what their motives are. But yet what they did saved an entire nation of people living all over the world. It's an incredible story. So back to the question, where is God in this? Why is God not mentioned? Well, there's an old Latin philosopher called Erasmus, so I'm going to take this up a level for some of you scholarly people for just a second. And Erasmus said this, bidden or not bidden, God is present. What does that mean? Whether you acknowledge it or not, God is there. Whether you see him or not, God is there. And so the real interesting message of the book of Esther is that God is powerfully at work in places precisely where we don't see him. Where there's no visible to us evidence, God is still at work in the lives of his people, bringing about what is good for them. That's what's called God's providence. And I want to explain that word right before we get into the story. The providence of God is this, that God in some invisible way is governing over everything that happens. That God doesn't need to use the miraculous, but he can work through the everyday events of human life and the everyday decisions of people to bring about what is best for his people. Maybe Romans 8:28 is the best New Testament summary of the theology of Esther. And we know that in all things, God works for the good of those who love him, who have been called according to his purpose. And the Jews every year celebrate that God has been faithful to the people that he called to keep them alive, to not let them be destroyed, and to always look out for them and take care of them, even when we don't see God. And this story of Esther is read every year that they celebrate Purim. So we're going to read that story together today, okay? And we're going to listen to the story of Esther and let it speak to us. And the final thing I would say about God is this. I remember an old preacher saying years ago that God is like the wind. You can't see the wind, but you can see the effects of the wind. And you know that it's there. So, if you're ready, sit back and relax. Put your tray tables down. Enjoy yourself. And we are going to, you want the lights to come down a little bit? We'd like the lights to come down a little bit. My director of lights says, bring them down a little bit. And here we go. So this is what happened during the time of Xerxes. The Xerxes who ruled over 127 provinces, stretching all the way from India to Kush, that is Egypt. And at that time, King Xerxes reigned from his royal throne in the citadel of Susa. And in the third year of his reign, he gave a banquet for all of his nobles and officials and the military leaders of Persia and Media, the princes, the nobles of the province were present. And for a full 180 days, he displayed the vast wealth of his kingdom and the splendor and glory of his majesty. And when these days were over, the king gave a banquet lasting 7 days. And in the enclosed garden of the king's palace, for all the people, from the least to the greatest, who were in the citadel of Susa. And the guarding had these hangings that were white and blue linen, fastened with cords of white linen and purple material to silver rings that were on marble pillars. And there were couches of gold and silver on a mosaic pavement of purple quartz, marble, mother of pearl, and other costly stones. And wine was served in goblets of gold, and each one was different from the other. And the royal wine was abundant, in keeping with the king's liberality. By the king's command, each guest was allowed to drink with no restrictions, for the king instructed all the wine stewards to serve each man what he wished. Now Queen Vashti, She also gave a banquet for all the women of the royal palace of King Xerxes. And on the seventh day, when King Xerxes was high in spirits from the wine, he commanded the seven servants who served him, Mehuman, Biztha, Harbona, Bigtha, Abagtha, Zether, and Carcass, to bring before him Queen Vashti, wearing her royal crown in order to display her beauty to the people and the nobles. For she was lovely to look at. But when the attendants delivered the king's command, Queen Vashti refused to come. Then the king became furious, and he burned with anger. And since it was customary for the king to consult experts in matters of the law and justice, he spoke with the wise men who understood the times and who were closest to the king. And these were the wise men, Karshina, Shethar, Admatha, Tarshish, Meres, Marsena, and Memucan, my favorite name. The seven nobles of Persia and Media who had special access to the king and were highest in the kingdom, according to the law, what must be done to Queen Vashti? He asked. She has not obeyed the command of King Xerxes. And then Memucan replied in the presence of the kings and nobles, Queen Vashti has done wrong, not only against the king, but against all the nobles and people of the province of King Xerxes. For the queen's conduct will become known to all the women. And then they will despise their husbands, and they will say, well, King Xerxes commanded Queen Vashti to come before him, but she would not come. And that very day, the Persian and Median women of nobility who've heard about the queen's conduct will respond to all the king's nobles in the same way. There will be no end of disrespect and discord. Therefore, if it pleases the king, let him issue a royal decree, and let it be written in the laws of Persia and Media, which cannot be repealed, that Vashti is to never again enter the presence of King Xerxes. And also, let the king give her royal position to someone else who is better than she. And then when the king's edict is proclaimed throughout all the vast realm, all the women will respect their husbands from the least to the greatest. And the king and his nobles, they were pleased with this advice. So the king did as Memucan proposed, and he sent dispatches to all parts of the kingdom, to each province, to its own script, its own people in their language, proclaiming that every man should rule over his household. Later on, when King Xerxes' fury had subsided, he remembered Vashti and what she had done and what he had decreed about her. And then the king's personal attendants proposed, let a search be made for beautiful young ladies for the king. Let the king appoint commissioners in every province of the realm to bring all the beautiful young women into the citadel of Susa, and let them be placed under the care of Haggai, the king's servant, who is in charge of the women, and let beauty treatments be given to them. And then let the young woman who pleases the king be queen instead of Vashti. And this advice appealed to the king, and he followed it. Now there was in the citadel of Susa a Jew who was of the tribe of Benjamin, named Mordecai, the son of Jair, the son of Shimei, the son of Kish, who had been carried into exile from Jerusalem by Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, and among those taken captive with Jehoiakim, king of Judah. Mordecai had a cousin named Hadassah, whom he had brought up because she had neither father or mother. This young woman, who was also known as Esther, had a lovely figure, and she was beautiful to look at. And Mordecai had taken care of her as if she were his own daughter when her mother and father died. And when the king's order and edict had been proclaimed, many young women were brought to the citadel of Susa and put under the care of Haggai. Esther was also taken to the king's palace and entrusted to Haggai, who had charge of the harem. She pleased Haggai and won his favor, and immediately he provided her with beauty treatments, special food. He assigned to her seven female attendants selected from the king's palace and moved her and her attendants into the best place in the palace. Esther had not revealed her nationality and her family background because Mordecai had forbidden her to do so. And every day Mordecai walked back and forth near the courtyard of the women to find out how Esther was and what was happening to her. Now, before a young woman's turn came to go into King Xerxes, she had to complete 12 months of beauty treatments prescribed for the women, 6 months with oil of myrrh and 6 months with perfumes and cosmetics. And this is how she would go to the king. And then anything she wanted to take with her, she could take from the king's harem into his palace. And in the evening, she would go there, and in the morning, return to another part under the care of Shagaz, the king's servant who was in charge of that part. Then she would not return to the king unless he was pleased with her and summoned her by her name. So the turn came, after a year of beauty treatments, for Esther to go into the king. And she asked for nothing but what Haggai, the king's servant who was in charge of the harem, suggested. And Esther won the favor of everyone who saw her. She was taken to King Xerxes in the royal residence in the 10th month, the month of Tebeth, in the 7th year of his reign. Now the king was attracted to Esther more than any of the other women. She won his favor and approval more than the other young women, so he set a royal crown on her head, and he made her queen instead of Vashti. And the king gave a banquet. It was called Esther's Banquet for all of his nobles and officials. And he proclaimed a holiday throughout all the provinces, and he distributed gifts with royal generosity. Now Mordecai was sitting at the king's gate. He was a guard there. And Esther had kept secret her family background and nationality, just as Mordecai told her to do, for she continued to follow Mordecai's instructions, as she had done when he was bringing her up. During the time Mordecai was sitting at the king's gate, Bigantha and Teresh, two of the king's officials who guarded the doorway, became angry with the king, and they conspired to assassinate King Xerxes. But Mordecai found out about the plot, and he told Queen Esther, who in turn told it to the king, giving credit to Mordecai. And when the report was invested and found to be true, the two officials were put to death. And all of this was recorded in the book of the annals in the presence of the king. Now, after these events, King Xerxes honored Haman, son of Hammedatha, the Agagite, elevating him and giving him a great honor higher than that of all the other nobles. And all the royal officials at the king's gate knelt down and paid honor to Haman, for the king had commanded this concerning him. But Mordecai would not kneel down or pay honor. So the royal officials at the king's gate asked Mordecai, "Why do you disobey the king's command?" Day after day they spoke to him, but he refused to comply. Therefore they told Haman about it to see whether Mordecai's behavior would be tolerated, and they told him that he was a Jew. When Haman saw that Mordecai would not kneel down or pay honor to him, he was enraged. Yet having learned who Mordecai's people were, he scorned the idea of killing only Mordecai. Instead, Haman looked for a way to destroy all of Mordecai's people, the Jews, throughout the whole kingdom of Xerxes. And in the 12th year of King Xerxes, in the first month, in the month of Nisan, the pure, that is the lot, which is like dice, was cast in the presence of Haman to select a day and a month. And the lot fell on the 12th month, the month of Adar. And then Haman said to King Xerxes, King, there is a certain people dispersed among the peoples in all the provinces of your kingdom who keep themselves separate. Their customs are different from those of all your other people, and they do not obey the king's laws. It's not in the king's best interest to tolerate them. If it pleases the king, let a decree be issued to destroy them, and I will give you 1,000 talents of silver for the royal treasury. So the king took his signet ring from his finger, gave it to Haman, son of Hammedatha, the Agagite, the enemy of the Jews. "Keep the money," the king said to Haman, "and do with the people as you please." And then on the 13th day of the first month, the royal secretaries were summoned, and they wrote out in the script of each province and in the language of each people all Haman's orders to the king's satraps, the governors of the various provinces, the nobles of the various peoples. And these were written in the name of King Xerxes himself and sealed with his own ring. And dispatches were sent by couriers to all the king's province with the orders to destroy the Jews on a single day, the 13th day of the 12th month, the month of Adar, and to take all of their goods. A copy of the text of the edict was issued as law in every province and made known to the people of every nationality so they would be ready for that day. And the couriers went out, spurred on by the king's command, and the edict was issued in the citadel of Susa, and the king and Haman sat down to drink. But the city of Susa was bewildered. When Mordecai learned of all that had been done, he tore his clothes, he put on sackcloth and ashes on his head. And he went out into the city, wailing loudly and bitterly. But he went only as far as the king's gate, because no one in sackcloth and ashes was allowed to enter it. And in every province to which the edict and the order of the king came, there was great mourning among the Jews, with fasting, weeping, and wailing. Many lay in sackcloth and ashes. And when Esther's servants and female attendants came and told her about Mordecai, she was in great distress. She sent clothes for him to put on instead of his sackcloth, but he would not accept them. And then Esther summoned Hathach, one of her servants, and ordered him to go out, find out what's troubling Mordecai and why. So Hathach went out to Mordecai in the open square of the city in front of the king's gate. And Mordecai told him everything that had happened to him, including the exact amount of money Haman had promised to pay to the royal treasury for the destruction of the Jews. He also gave him a copy of the text of the edict for their annihilation, which had been published in Susa, to show Esther, explain it to her. He told him, go and instruct her, go to the king's presence, beg for mercy, plead with the king for her people. And Hathach went back and reported to Esther what Mordecai had said. Then Esther instructed him to say to Mordecai,
all the king's officials and the people of the royal provinces know that for any man or woman who approaches the king in the inner court without being summoned, the king has but one law, that they be put to death, unless the king extends the gold scepter to them and spares their lives. But 30 days have passed since I was called to go to the king.
And when Esther's words were reported to Mordecai, he sent back this answer. Do not think that because you are in the king's house, you alone of all the Jews will escape. For if you remain silent at this time, relief and deliverance for the Jews will arise from another place. But you and your father's family will perish. And who knows but that you have come to your royal position for such a time as this. Then Esther sent this reply to Mordecai.
Go, gather all the Jews who are in Susa and fast for me. Do not eat or drink for 3 days, night or day. I and my attendants will fast as you do. When this is done, I will go to the king, even though it is against the law. And if I perish, I perish.
So Mordecai went away, and he carried out all of Esther's instructions. And on the third day, Esther put on her royal robes, and she stood in the inner court of the palace in front of the king's hall. And the king was sitting on his royal throne in the hall facing the entrance. And when he saw Queen Esther standing in the court, he was pleased with her, and he held out to her his gold scepter with his hand. So Esther approached and touched the tip of the scepter. And then the king said, what is it, Queen Esther? What is your request? Even up to half my kingdom, it will be given to you.
If it pleases the king, let the king, together with Haman, come to a banquet today that I have prepared for him.
But we'll bring Haman at once, so that we may do what Esther asks. So the king and Haman went to the banquet that Esther had prepared. And while they were drinking wine, the king asked Esther again, now what is your petition? It will be given to you. What is your request? Even up to half the kingdom, it will be granted. Esther replied,
my petition and my request is this. If the king regards me with favor, and if it pleases the king to grant my petition and fulfill my request, let the king and Haman come tomorrow to the banquet I will prepare for them. Then I will answer the king's question.
So now Haman went out that day happy and in high spirits. But when he saw Mordecai at the king's gate and observed that he neither rose nor showed fear in his presence, he was filled with rage against Mordecai. Nevertheless, Haman restrained himself and he went home, calling together his friends and Zeresh's wife. Haman boasted to them about his vast wealth, his many sons, all the ways the king had honored him, and how he had elevated him above all the other nobles and officials. And that's not all, Haman added. I'm the only person Queen Esther invited to accompany the king to a banquet she gave. And she's invited me again along with the king tomorrow. But all this gives me no satisfaction, as long as I see that Jew Mordecai sitting at the king's gate. And his wife Zeresh and all his friends said to him, well, why don't you have a pole set up, reaching about 50 cubits high, and ask the king in the morning to have Mordecai hung on it, and then go to the king in the banquet and enjoy yourself. Well, this suggestion delighted Haman, so he had a pole set up. But meanwhile, back at the palace, that night the king could not sleep. So he ordered the book of the Chronicles, the record of the kings, to be brought out and read to him. And it was found there that Mordecai had exposed Bigthan and Teresh, two of the king's officers who guarded the doorway, who had conspired to assassinate King Xerxes. And the king asked, well, what honor or recognition has Mordecai received for this? Nothing has been done for him, his attendants answered. And the king said, well, who's outside in the court? Now Haman had just entered the court of the palace to speak to the king about putting Mordecai on the pole he set up for him. And his attendants answered, Haman is standing in the court. Well, bring him in, the king ordered. And when Haman entered, the king asked him, Haman, what do you think should be done for the man the king delights to honor? Now Haman thought to himself, well, who is there the king would rather honor than me? So he said to himself, well, for this man the king delights to honor, have him bring a royal robe the king has worn, and a horse the king has ridden, one with the royal crest placed on its head, and let the robe and the horse be entrusted to one of the king's most noble princes, and let them robe the man the king delights to honor, and lead him on the horse through the city streets, proclaiming before him, this is what is done for the man the king delights to honor. Go at once, the king commanded Haman. Get the robe and the horse, and do just as you have suggested for Mordecai the Jew, who sits at the king's gate, and do not neglect anything you have recommended. So Haman got the robe and the horse, and he robed Mordecai, and led him on horseback through the city streets, proclaiming before him, this is what is done for the man the king delights to honor. And afterward, Mordecai returned to the king's gate, but Haman rushed home. His head was covered in grief. And he told Zeresh, his wife, and all his friends everything that happened. And his advisors and his wife said to him, since Mordecai, before whom your downfall has started, is of Jewish origin, you cannot stand against him. You will surely come to ruin. And while they were still talking with him, the king's servants arrived and hurried Haman away to the banquet Esther had prepared. So the king and Haman went to Queen Esther's banquet. As they were drinking wine the second day, the king asked, Queen Esther, what is your petition? It will be given to you. What is your request? Even up to half the kingdom, it will be granted. Then Queen Esther answered,
if I have found favor with you, your majesty, and if it pleases you, grant me my life. This is my petition. And spare my people. This is my request. For I and my people have been sold to be destroyed. If we had merely been sold as male and female slaves, I would have kept quiet, because no such distress would justify disturbing the king.
King Xerxes asked Queen Esther, who is he? Where is he, this man that has desired to do such a thing? Esther said,
an adversary, an enemy, this vile Haman.
Well, then Haman was terrified before the king and queen. And the king got up in a rage, and he left his wine, and he went out into the palace garden. But Haman, realizing that the king had decided his fate, stayed behind to beg Queen Esther for his life. And just as the king returned from the palace garden to the banquet hall, Haman was falling on the couch where Esther was reclining. And the king exclaimed, ah, will he even attack the queen? Well, she's with me in the house. As soon as the word left the king's mouth, they covered Haman's face. And then Harbona, one of the servants attending the king, said, you know, there's this pole about 50 cubits high next to Haman's house. He set it up for Mordecai, who helped the king. And the king said, well, hang him on it. So they put Haman on the pole that he had set up for Mordecai, and then the king's fury subsided. That same day, King Xerxes gave Queen Esther the estate of Haman, the enemy of the Jews. And Mordecai came into the presence of the king, for Esther had told him how he was related to her. And the king took off his signet ring, which he had gotten back from Haman, and presented it to Mordecai. And Esther appointed him over Haman's estate. And Esther again pleaded with the king, falling at his feet and weeping. She begged him to put an end to the evil plan of Haman the Agagite, which he had devised against the Jews. And then the king extended the gold scepter to Esther, and she arose and stood before him.
If it pleases the king, and if he regards me with favor and thinks it the right thing to do, and if he is pleased with me, let an order be written overruling the dispatches that Haman, son of Hammedatha the Agagite, devised and wrote to destroy the Jews in all the king's provinces. For how can I bear to see disaster fall on my people? How can I bear to see the destruction of my family?
King Xerxes replied to Queen Esther and to Mordecai the Jew, because Haman attacked the Jews, I've given his estate to Esther, and they put him on the pole he set up. Now write another decree in the king's name in behalf of the Jews as it seems best to you. Seal it with the king's signet ring, for no document written in the king's name and sealed with his own ring can be revoked. And at once the royal secretaries were summoned, and on the 23rd day of the third month, the month of Sivan, they wrote out all Mordecai's orders to the Jews and to the satraps, governors, and nobles of the 127 provinces stretching from India to Egypt. And these orders were written in the script of each province and in the language of each people, and also to the Jews in their own script and language. Mordecai wrote in the name of King Xerxes, sealed the dispatches with the king's signet ring, and sent them by mounted couriers who rode fast horses, especially bred for the king. The king's edict granted the Jews in every city the right to assemble and protect themselves from the armed men of any nationality or province who might attack them and their women and their children. And the day appointed for the Jews to do this in all the provinces of King Xerxes was the 13th day of the 12th month of the month of Adar. And a copy of the text of the edict was to be issued as law in every province and made known to the people of every nationality, so that the Jews would be ready on that day to avenge themselves on their enemies. And the couriers, riding the royal horses, went out, spurred on by the king's command. And the edict was issued in the citadel of Susa. And when Mordecai left the king's presence, he was wearing royal garments of blue and white, a large crown of gold, and a purple robe of fine linen. And the city of Susa held a joyous celebration. For the Jews, it was a time of happiness, joy, gladness, and honor. In every province, in every city which the edict of the king came, there was joy and gladness among the Jews with feasting and celebration. And many other people of other nationalities became Jews because fear of the Jews had seized them. And on the 13th day of the 12th month, the month of Adar, the edict commanded by the king was to be carried out. And on this day, the enemy of the Jews had hoped to overpower them, but now the tables were turned, and the Jews got the upper hand over those who hated them. The Jews assembled in the cities and all the province of King Xerxes to attack those determined to destroy them. No one could stand against them because the people of all the other nationalities were afraid of them. And the nobles of the provinces, the satraps, the governors, the king's administrators, they helped the Jews because fear of Mordecai had seized them. Mordecai was prominent in the palace. His reputation spread throughout the provinces, and he became more and more powerful. And the Jews struck down all their enemies and those who hated them. And they took the 10 sons of Haman as well and put them on poles. But they didn't take their goods. They didn't lay hands on their plunder. So Mordecai recorded these events, and he sent letters to the Jews throughout all the provinces of King Xerxes, near and far, to have them celebrate annually the 14th and 15th days of the month of Adar as the time when the Jews got relief from their enemies, and as the month when their sorrow was turned to joy and their mourning into a day of celebration. He wrote them to observe the days as days of feasting, joy, giving presents of food to one another, and gifts to the poor. So the Jews agreed to continue the celebration they had begun, doing what Mordecai had written to them. For Haman, son of Hammedatha, the Agagite, the enemy of all the Jews, had plotted against the Jews to destroy them, and he had cast the pure, that is the lot, for their ruin and destruction. But when the plot came to the king's attention, he issued written orders that the evil scheme Haman had devised against the Jews should come back on his own head. And therefore these days were called Purim, from the word pure. Because of everything written in this letter, and because of what they'd seen and what happened to them, the Jews took it upon themselves to establish the custom that they and their descendants and all who joined them should without fail observe these 2 days every year in the way prescribed and at the time appointed. And the days would be remembered and observed by every generation, every family, in every province, in every city. And these days of Purim should never fail to be celebrated by the Jews, nor should the memory of these days die out among their descendants. So Queen Esther, the daughter of Abihail, along with Mordecai the Jew, wrote with full authority to confirm this second letter concerning Purim. And Mordecai sent the letter to all the Jews in the 127 provinces of Xerxes' kingdom, words of goodwill and assurance to establish these days of Purim at their designated times, as Mordecai the Jew and Queen Esther had decreed for them, and as they established for themselves and their descendants in regards to their times of fasting and lamentation. And Esther's decree confirmed these regulations about Purim, and it was written down in the records. And King Xerxes and all of his acts of power and might, together with a full account of the greatness of Mordecai, whom the king had promoted, are they not written in the books of the annals of the kings of Media and Persia? Mordecai the Jew was second in rank to King Xerxes, preeminent among the Jews, held in high esteem by his many fellow Jews, because he worked for the good of his people and spoke up for the welfare of the Jews. The word of God. Amen. I want to encourage you. You know, when people say, you know, have you read the Bible? You just read an entire book of the Bible this morning. You should feel good about that. You have read the Word of God. An interesting story that doesn't mention God, but could you see God? Like, you can't see the wind, but you see the effect of the wind. Could you see the effect of God? Where was God in this story? So I'd like us to take a moment and reflect upon this story together. And I'd like to do it with a time of prayer.